Okay, so for tonight we're going to talk about what? What did we talk about already?
Monkeys.
Yeah, but what did we say already about it? It said something on it. So she's taking a class. What's it called?
There's some creatures that
the kingdoms
get along and some that don't.
Oh yeah. So what's your class called?
Physical anthropology.
Right. So she's taking this course on physical anthropology, which is pretty standard. And that Abdu'l-Bahá and the divine philosophers that you might read, they talk about these different kingdoms. So they have the mineral kingdom, the vegetable kingdom, the animal kingdom, and then the human kingdom. And they actually call these kingdoms. And if you go on Wikipedia, you can look this up under order of things. And they have they still have these kingdoms.
Right.
But they don't have a separate human kingdom anymore.
They don't?
Well, we go on Wikipedia and look this up.
I can't get online at all anymore.
Uh-oh, you're kicked out, huh?
Well, the, only the view thing works.
Oh, well, don't screw it up. You can do it from there?
Yeah.
So if you go there and type in kingdom in Wikipedia, it tells you what these kingdoms are, and I think they have five kingdoms now. So they have, well, they have, like, vegetable, animal. They might have seven kingdoms. They don't have the human kingdom, then they have a bacteria kingdom, a prokaryote kingdom, a eukaryote kingdom.
Hmm.
So they've kind of changed it, you know.
Taxonomic rank.
Yeah, they're called taxonomic rank.
Taxonomy. Historically, the highest rank, or in the three domain system, rank below domain. Each kingdom is divided into smaller groups called phyla.
Oh yeah, kingdom phyla.
Currently, many textbooks from the United States use a kingdom of six kingdoms.
Yeah.
Animalia, plantae, fungi, protista.
What?
Protista.
Yeah, protista.
Archaea. And bacteria.
Bacteria, see. Mm. So they don't have a mineral kingdom. They got rid of the human kingdom, and the animal and plant kingdom are still there. But then they kicked the fungus and the bacteria out of those kingdoms, create these other kingdoms.
Mm.
And the whole thing's so messed up, they don't even know what species is. Mm. Species, the meaning of the word species is so hotly debated now, they can't even agree on what it means. Mm. So it's lost all meaning. And I think what it used to mean was something specific.
Well, yeah, they're saying what it means now in my textbook.
Yeah, but it doesn't. It's still disputed. But what is it, what are they saying in your textbook?
They're saying that it's a group of organisms that can mate and produce fertile offspring.
Right. Mm. And that's the basic definition that people are going by, but even that's being refuted. Like, they refuted so much of it they can't agree. But this is the one that a lot have settled on. Okay, so instead of having a human kingdom, that's a higher kingdom altogether than the mineral, the vegetable, and the animal. And you could argue whether bacteria and fungus should, you know, fungus should probably be in the vegetable kingdom, and bacteria probably be in the animal kingdom.
They had fungus in the vegetable kingdom for a very long time.
But it started to eat away into everything else, and they had to remove it.
When they started to look at the DNA of it,
yeah.
It was just too different. That they just could not justify keeping it in there anymore.
Oh, because of the DNA?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to get into next. What's the difference?
They didn't really say. They just said, in my textbook, I'm sure we could look at it. But anyway, they said it was in there, in the plant kingdom for the longest time, and then when they started, like, breaking down the DNAs, it was just too different from the plant kingdom.
Now, what about the prokaryote, or what were the other two kingdoms? The bacteria, why aren't they in the animal kingdom?
Probably because animals, the definition probably isn't a single-celled organism.
It's not anymore?
They're probably differentiating it. I bet that Colin Suter tells.
Anyway, so what they do is they come up with a criteria, and then they go by the qualities and attributes to then categorize stuff. Mm-hmm. So categorizing all this stuff is what they're calling taxonomy, and then they have all these words that they use to do this. So what they start doing is there's two ways that they look at the similarity of things to group them. So if they're the same, then they're in the same kingdom. But then if they're in the same kingdom, then they start to differentiate between each one. Then they wind up in different phylums. What comes after phylum? They don't even agree on this anymore. But what comes after phylum in their hierarchy? Their taxonomic hierarchical structure.
Class,
see? So then they put them in different classes and so forth. So the way they originally did this is they didn't know about DNA. So they just looked at stuff the way it looked. See? So, obviously a giraffe looks quite different from a hippopotamus. But a hippopotamus looks similar to a rhinoceros. So they just went by the visual qualities and attributes and started to group things that were similar. And then if they were then they'd look at how they were dissimilar, and if they were dissimilar enough, they started putting them in classes and families and finally species. And one of the final breakdown in species, which a lot of them still go by, but it's disputed by others, is if they can mate together or not. Like the horse and the donkey can mate. But then the mule that produced is sterile. It can't reproduce after that. So I don't know if they put those in the same species or not.
They don't.
Because of that. But it's if you have an offspring that itself can reproduce, that's a species. Yeah. But they can still create an offspring, but because it can't itself reproduce, they say the horse and the donkey, is that right, are separate species? But all the horses are one species. All the dogs that can interbreed are one species. Okay, so then they discovered DNA. So when they discovered the DNA, they look at the DNA sequences, and they can see, for instance, with the chimpanzee, we have 99% similar DNA. Whereas with the squid, we don't have that much DNA in common. So again, what they're doing is they're looking at what you have in common versus what the difference is, but instead of how it looks, you see what I mean, outwardly, they're looking at the genetic structure of it to classify it if it's the same that way.
I think they're only saying it's 97% similar.
Oh, is it 97? I don't know. Okay, so here's how they classify human beings according to her physical anthropology. They use both methods, DNA and the way it looks. They sort of do a combination. So tell them how you're going down the classification.
You want me to get it out?
No, just do it from memory. We have a spine. Well, where'd you start? You started somewhere.
Well, we're in the kingdom Animalia.
Okay, so they start, we're in the kingdom, we're in the animal kingdom. So that's where they start. Okay, go ahead.
We're in the phylum Chordata, which means we have a spinal cord.
Yeah, Chordata. So we have a spinal cord.
Hmm.
Yeah, so that includes the giraffe. Okay, what's next?
I don't know.
Well, until finally what?
You just do my memory. It goes all the way down until you finally get to genus. And then we're genus Homo.
Huh?
And then we're species sapien, Homo sapiens. But we're exactly the same as the primates, except the primates, they come down and they are...
The same genus or not?
No, they're genus Pan.
And then what?
And then all the different classes of monkeys, they're not the same species. Like all of humanity is one species,
right.
But not all of the monkeys are one species.
Right. So like
they're all different species.
No wait, but
like the great apes.
Monkeys aren't Pan.
Yeah, they are.
They are? Yeah. I thought monkeys and apes weren't both the same genus.
Yeah, they might be different. But the apes are Pan.
Yeah, what are the monkeys?
It depends. There's like four different groups.
There is?
Yeah.
Well. So the monkeys can't interbreed with each other?
No. Not unless they're the same species. Well, if they do, they don't make a fertile offspring, I guess.
Yeah. So anyway, it comes down to monkeys, and then apes, and then man. And that, apparently, and I didn't really understand this, but the monkeys aren't the same as the ape. Did you already know that?
Well, I knew there was a difference, yeah.
Yeah.
But not genetically. I mean, I didn't think about that.
So we're considered closer to the ape, and the ape isn't the same thing as a monkey. So, for instance, in Planet of the Apes, they had the gorillas were the army people, and then the orangutans were the, like Dr. Zaius, were the scientists, and then the chimpanzees were the intellectuals. I think the orangutans were the politicians and stuff like this, the leaders, you know. The gorillas were the army.
Yeah.
It's a great metaphor for the story. But anyway, that's the three groups of apes.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that's Planet of the Apes. Those are the apes. Everything else that's not a chimpanzee, an orangutan, or a gorilla, which is the great ape, those are monkeys. They're different than those apes. Yeah. And so we're closer in similarity to the apes than we are to the monkeys. The monkeys are like other things. They're not. The chimpanzee's not a monkey, it's an ape. I didn't know that. I thought a chimpanzee was a monkey, but it's not.
Kevin pointed out something.
What?
That, you know how you were explaining, you know, at first they were like, just kind of classifying us according to how we look.
Yeah.
That's called our phenotype.
Oh, yeah. Huh?
So now they're classifying us according to our genotype rather than our phenotype.
Yeah, that is what they call it.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good clarification. Does Colin Suey want to add this to monkeys?
Colin Suey is having a lot of trouble with his connection, and he's driving to the school.
installed.
This is crazy for him. I feel bad for him.
He needs to get a connection.
It's so cheap.
I know. How much? Is it, like 20?
Well, when he logs back on, tell him that he can get a connection.
Yeah, he can get like a Skybeam.
Then he can lay in his bed and listen to this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he doesn't have to be driving around Wausau.
Yeah, he's got to be able to get DSL there.
Look up the difference between monkey
Quest,
and
if you Quest. Quest DSL is so cheap now.
Yeah,
it's just a slight difference.
Well, what does it say? What's the file of the genus between monkey, ape, and man? I want to know the names.
Oh, the classifications.
Yeah,
12. I told you I'm gonna look this up.
Well, that's when we get right down to it.
Oh man,
so anyway, they have this thing called the. They have several of these things. One of them's called the Last Common Ancestor. And I can get this confused with the least common denominator or the greatest common multiple multiplier. And then the other one's called, so there's the last common ancestor, and then there's this thing called the universal common ancestor. So supposedly everything goes back to one common ancestor. And I was talking to a school teacher that taught science, and he was saying that the reason they believe everything came from one original thing is because of genetics. That we only have four... what are they called? The four bases.
Base pairs.
The four base pairs of genes, which is one of them cytosine, and then there's like A, P, G, A, T. They give them the initials.
All right, S.
S is one of them? I don't think S is one of them.
Z?
C? Yeah. G, A, C, and T. Cytosine is C, and then I don't know, then
adrenaline.
Guanine is G. So these are, and then what's there's a T maybe.
Terazine?
Yeah, terapin.
Terapin.
Sorry.
So anyway, because so he said this is in all the every animal that they know of has the same genetic structure, you know, and then even the plants do. So I was like, what are you saying that our last common ancestor is a plant? You know, that talk. How do we evolve from plants? You know, at some point, the plants and the animals, they're different kingdoms. They at least, thank God, still list them as different kingdoms. They don't say they're one kingdom.
This doesn't really tell the genus, but maybe this will help.
So what he was saying is that, well, and then he said the last common ancestor that we had, or the universal common ancestor, might not have been an organism. And I was like, well, what are you talking about? So then I had to go do all this research on my own, and I finally found out what he was saying. That's what I want to talk about tonight. Okay.
Okay, so you have all the primates.
Oh, primates.
And then those are into two groups, the haplorhenes and the strepsirhenes.
Uh-huh.
The haplorhenes are all where the apes and us are.
Uh-huh.
See? So then they have New World monkeys. That's all Ceboidea.
Uh-huh.
That's all the monkeys that live in this side of the world.
Where are we?
Then you have the Old World monkeys. That's all the monkeys that live in Asia and Africa. These are all the ones that live in South
they
America.
They can't interbreed.
Right.
Well, here's apes. And
these are hominoidea. We're with apes and humans and hominoidea. And then that's gibbons, the great apes, the orangutans, the gorillas, the chimpanzees, and the bonobo, and the hominids.
We're the hominids? What's a gibbon?
The great apes.
Yeah, you want to see a picture?
No, the great apes separate. The great apes says orangutan and gorilla.
Let me show you.
Great apes are orangutan, gorilla, chimpanzee, and bonobo.
Yeah, that's all the great apes.
What's a gibbon?
Let me show you.
But I didn't know they were all great apes. I thought just the gorilla was the great ape.
No, the chimpanzees, that's why they
and
say...
And the orangutans.
Like when they say a and chimpanzee, the bonobo. They say he's a monkey. They're not. They're apes. That's what they're saying.
They're great apes.
They're the great apes. They're saying out of all of them, we're closest to the chimpanzee.
I was thinking of that too. I didn't want to say.
Yeah.
What?
We're closest to the chimpanzee.
I don't feel that close to the chimpanzee.
That's what they're saying. I'm telling you what they're saying. Genetically.
Okay, what's a bonobo? You didn't mention those before.
It's like a chimp.
They look
smaller.
Just like a chimp, yeah.
Oh, they're the smaller chimp.
And the different one of the main differences is that they solve all their problems with sex.
Oh, that's the ones that do
that. Oh, they're the ones that do that?
That's
what I was
telling
you. Make love, not war?
Right.
Ape?
See, that wasn't a monkey. It was the I told you that was a chimpanzee.
That's so funny.
But it's not. It's a bonobo.
It's a bonobo, yeah.
Oh, so they're not considered chimpanzees?
That's a gibbon.
And they're...
The whole thing's a gibbon.
More peaceful animal than the chimps.
Well, so the gibbon can't interbreed with the bonobo?
No.
That's not a very good spot.
None of these great apes can interbreed.
No.
Okay, but what's the phylum and genus called that separates it? We're Homo sapien, what's the gorilla? Homo gorilla?
Hey, Colin?
Yes?
Do you know there's garlic butter here?
Yeah, I gotta avoid garlic.
Oh, okay.
Kevin has a lot to say. I've been Kevin, sorry.
Okay, but look it up. Put him on audio so he can talk and then look up the question.
To mute us?
First yeah. He says, I think those four basic things are related to the four basic elements in organic life. C-H-O-N.
John.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that later.
Are the mineral kingdom base, then the four base pairs are made from some combinations of those four mineral elements.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that
says,
later.
Plus, the bonobo walks upright very often. Then Kevin says, Homo humongous.
Is that what it is? He's getting.
They're not in the Homo genus.
We're going to talk. We're going to talk about Chon later. That's important. Carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen. Mm-hmm. Chon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want one of those.
Chon.
Those pets.
So what's the gorilla called, for instance? Is it Homo or hetero? Or zygotic. Zugo.
Zygotic.
Zugo.
Okay, genus Pongo is the orangutans.
Pongo?
Pongo.
So instead of Homo, it's Pongo?
Yeah. These are all the family.
Where did they come up with this stuff?
Hominidae, which are the great apes.
It's to keep us out of understanding. When you're sitting in a meeting with them, they're like, Pongo!
Okay, so hear this. These are the great apes. Pongo, which is orangutans. Gorilla, which is the gorillas.
Wait, gorilla's the name instead of Homo? It's just gorilla?
Yeah, it's gorilla.
No.
Genus gorilla.
Genus Homo, humans. Genus Pan, chimpanzees.
Oh, chimpanzee.
The common chimpanzee, the bonobo, and the billy ape.
What?
Newly discovered, no taxonomy.
What are they called?
Billy ape.
What?
Newly discovered,
where did they
no
discover
taxonomy.
That? They discovered it next to the... What's the abomination?
The first instance of evolution they've discovered.
Then they have the family Yeti and Sasquatch. I mean, come on. Where did you draw the line?
But these guys... Well, Wikipedia? Oh, okay. They don't have gibbons in hominidae. They only have it in hominoidea, which is one up.
Great. So we're Homo sapiens as opposed to Homo erectus, right?
Yeah, we're Homo sapiens.
Homo erectus, that's like Neanderthal.
That's an early form of man. Homo means human, right? Same. Means the same as us. Homo.
Yeah.
So it's human, similar, same. Right? Is that what human means? Human comes from the word same as us?
Does it?
I don't know. Hominin.
What's
sapien?
Sapiens.
Kevin's laughing his ass off. We don't even know what he's talking about.
What's sapien? You said sapien was something else.
What it means?
You said Homo was the species and sapien was the species. Which one was wild?
Homo is the genus, sapiens... The species.
Uh-huh. And so gorilla is the genus?
Genus.
And what's the species?
There's Western gorilla.
Where's the Latin name? It's not called Western gorilla.
It's called G. gorilla.
Uh-huh.
And then there's G. beringi, which is Eastern gorilla.
Okay. And what about the orangutan?
You got the Bornean orangutan. That's the Pongo pygmaeus.
There we go. Pongo pygmaeus.
And then you've got the Sumatran orangutan, which is the Pongo abeli.
See, the Pongo abeli and the Pongo pygmaeus.
Pygmaeus.
The common chimpanzee is called Pan troglodytes.
Troglodytes.
And the bonobo is the Pan peniscus.
Pan peniscus. There we go. See, the troglodytes was a group, wasn't there? Weren't they? That's what you call somebody if they're uncivilized, a troglodyte, right?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. True.
A troglodyte.
Have you heard that word before?
I think so.
Hey, you guys
are like going on a game now.
Yeah,
you guys are welcome to eat that spaghetti or whatever.
Hey, honey, will you look up Prefontaine in Wikipedia for me? Thanks. You heard of Prefontaine, right?
Yes. Yeah, what is he?
Runner.
Oh, runner.
A famous Olympic runner.
Uh-huh.
You've heard of Prefontaine.
Yeah.
We were going up to the Rifle High School today, and we left, and we took this back road to get out of there, and it was called Prefontaine.
Hmm.
Steve... Prefontaine.
And I was probably, and I was like, the only person I know named Prefontaine's that Olympic famous guy. Is he from Rifle?
Born and raised in Coos Bay, Oregon.
No, he's not from Rifle.
I've been there.
Why do they have a street called Prefontaine?
He died at the age of 24 in a car accident.
Oh, he did? Did he win the Olympics? You ever live in Rifle?
Prefontaine prepared for the 1976 Summer Olympics in Montreal.
Oh, he didn't make it?
While running for the Oregon track record, Prefontaine was setting American records in every race from 2,000 to 10,000 meters.
Yeah.
On May 30th, 1975, returning from a party and after dropping off a friend and distance champion, Frank Shorter, Prefontaine was driving down Skyline Boulevard, east of the University of Oregon campus near Hendricks Park, where he swerved his gold 1973 MGB convertible left and hit a rock wall along the side of the
MGB
street.
MGB 3C5, come on.
The overturned car trapped Prefontaine underneath it.
It's too bad he was wearing a seatbelt. He might have been thrown from the car. I'm just kidding. Well, I didn't know that. That's tragic.
Those cars are tiny.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, back to... Where's Colin Sue? Is he still hunting for Wi-Fi?
I think he's still driving.
Poor guy. All right, so anyway, you can see what they're doing here. They created the animal phylum. You can edit out a lot of that, I guess, on the audio. But they created this animal phylum, and they put us in there, and then they come down to us being similar to these great apes. And then they look at the genetics, and we're closer to all of the apes, to the chimpanzee, by 90% DNA in common, but we can't tell what that means because when they did the Human Genome Project, they only mapped a certain amount of our DNA. Can you hear me, Nefertiti?
Mm-hmm.
The other DNA they called junk DNA.
They stopped calling it that.
Oh, they did.
Oh, they did as of last week.
No, as a while they stopped calling it that.
What do they call it now?
Non-coding DNA.
Oh,
and the humans have more non-coding DNA than any other species, and they don't know why.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when they say that we're 90, here's what I'm saying. You can correct me. If we're 97% similar to the chimp, that's the coding DNA that we have is 97% similar with the chimp's coding DNA. They're not including the non-coding DNA.
That's probably true.
See? So we're not 97% similar at all because we have more non-coding DNA than all of the other ones put together.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't deciphered it. So if you imagine if you had 1,000, those little kid blocks they have with the letters and pictures on the sides,
mm-hmm.
They're painted those fancy colors. So imagine you had 1,000 of those and the only ones that were coded were 10 of them. And that the other 990 were not coded. See? And so the chimpanzee and us have 9 of those 10 that are coded in common. So then they say we're 90% in common, and they're not including the 990 other things when they tell you the statistic, because they want to put this thing forward, because they don't understand what the heck they're talking about. So when they give you the statistic, it's 97%. I believe that they're only going by the coded stuff. And because the other stuff's uncoded, so how could they even compare it?
Mm-hmm.
See,
Kevin's saying it's the same kind of jump they made from phenotype to genotype.
Well, what does he mean by that?
What does that mean, Kevin?
Isn't that a crazy statistic? You hear that statistic and you're like, "Oh, 97."
What? Yeah, hang on.
Here, we're muting. We're muting ours.
Okay, go.
Okay, what I mean is that. When they had two things that looked alike on the outside, they might be completely unrelated genetically, like not even any connection whatsoever. And it wasn't until they figured out to look at genotype that they realized how different they were, when on the outside they looked like they might have been related. So they assumed they were, just like now they're looking at the genotype that they can see, and that's almost like another phenotype. Now to them, because they're like saying, oh, the genes mean it's going to look like this, or it's going to have these characteristics, and the other one's going to have these. So, wow, they're really the same, when really what they don't know about it reveals far more about it than what they do. And they're getting to that next leap in their understanding, the evolution of their understanding of those things. Okay, that's my
turn. Yeah.
Can they hear us? He hear us?
Now he can.
Yeah, that's what they for a long time they had whales and sharks, like all the fish. They were all in the same category. But then after they started doing the genotypes, they realized that whales and dolphins weren't anything like sharks at all. Like, they're completely different. And then they started figuring out that their fins and everything just are completely different, not based on the same genotypes.
Well, they're mammals, whales and...
Yeah, whereas sharks aren't mammals.
Your turn to speak. Okay, thanks, Kevin. So I'm wondering if they even had the term phenotype before they knew genetics. If they actually, or they came up with this later to cover up the fact that they were going by what they look like outwardly, mm-hmm. and then they called that phenotype so they could add genotype.
They probably invented it so they could express themselves.
Yeah, but I'm wondering when. If they did it after they discovered that the whole thing they were going by in the first place wasn't as accurate.
Anyway, well, no, I mean, this first guy that discovered, that classified all this, I mean, it was way before.
And he called it phenotyping when he did the classifications?
No, they didn't use that.
Well, I'm thinking they came up with phenotyping as an explanation for what he did after they did the genotyping.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Anyway, I'm not down on him because science evolves. So that's what it's supposed to do, you know. So what they're... Anyway, so this one guy said that our oldest universal common ancestor, you can look this up, this is what Darwin's book is called, Origin of Species. So what he's saying is that he believes that all of life originates from one common ancestor. So really the argument's the universal common ancestor. Well, they refuse to give this thing up. When you hear the word universal common ancestor, now you have to, that term, they're not going to give it away. They still talk like this, universal common ancestor. Now they're saying the universal common ancestor is not an organism, probably.
What is it?
Well, if it's not, well, then how's it an ancestor? My grandfather's my ancestor. My least common ancestor's not even an organism.
Is it a mineral?
Is it a vegetable? Is it a person, a place, or a thing?
Right.
Okay, what they're saying is they believe that basically the majority of life that's known on the earth now, maybe excluding the fungus because of this. Maybe not. I didn't look into the fungus. That our universal common ancestor is a gene pool. That's our universal common ancestor. The soup. This alphabet
the
soup.
The primordial soup.
The primordial soup. The gene pool.
Mm-hmm.
That is the ancestor. I was like, well, that's not a person or an animal. And he says all plant life and human life came out of this gene pool.
Mm-hmm.
And that in the gene pool, what they had, you're going to have to help me with this.
Okay.
They had things called like prokaryotes or eukaryotes, okay? Or mitochondria is like a prokaryote or eukaryote. I don't remember.
No, not mitochondria.
Whatever, you can correct me. And that they're like these little organisms that aren't even organisms. They're pre-organism things, okay? So they're not organisms, but they have DNA.
Single cell.
What?
Well, do they...
A mitochondria is not single-celled, is it?
Do they exist? Does the gene pool exist independent of any organism?
That's... Well, there's no... Yeah, the gene pool doesn't have any organisms in it. An organism...
How did the gene pool come into existence?
Well...
We're saying it's God.
Well, no. When the solar system was created and the Earth was formed, you know, in that, the DNA... was somehow fashioned, and then when the Earth
independent of any organisms,
it's DNA is pre-organism. Organism means it's an organism, like it has an organ. An organ has multiple cells. An organism has more than one cell. Well, there's single-celled organisms, isn't there?
Yeah.
Are there single-celled organisms or not?
Yeah, they're called prokaryotes.
Okay. Well, these things are pre-cellular things.
Okay.
They're not even cells. What are they? Look up prokaryote, eukaryote, or whatever. Read the definition online. It's
they
not even a single cell. What?
They are cells.
Well, then they're not an organism.
Yeah, they don't have like organs like a nucleus. You know?
You mean a cell has a nucleus?
Yeah, like a cell that joins with other cells has like a nucleus.
Yeah.
So there's something previous, like more.
Go look it up.
Than that.
Look up prokaryote.
It has no organs. It just does a. The DNA is in there.
That's why it's not an organism.
The DNA
blob? Yeah.
Well, here, look it up.
Protozoa.
Yeah.
That's what Kevin's saying.
Protozoa.
But it's not even the single-celled organism. It's not even an amoeba or an organism. It's pre-organismic.
So it's not alive.
Like it lacks the Golgi apparatus.
I don't even know what that is. Is that a real thing?
It's not alive, though, right?
Is it?
Hang on.
Yeah.
Is that what they're saying? It's not the gene pool. The components in the gene pool are not alive.
Yeah, they are alive.
Oh, they are.
They're just not organisms.
They're just not alive.
They're pure DNA.
And it's living matter.
Well, the DNA divides and reproduces itself.
Some step in place.
In the okay. That in the nucleus of the cell, we see the gene pool.
Right, it's got the DNA.
Yeah, the DNA is in the nucleus. It's not in the cell. The DNA is in the nucleus.
Okay.
And it's called nucleic acid because it's in the nucleus. DNA is nucleic acid. Styribo, nucleic acid. So right, this nucleic acid is in the nucleus, but it's not in the body of the cell. See? Yeah. So the gene pool in the cell is the nucleus of the cell.
Oh.
The nucleus of the cell is a gene pool.
Right.
Let's look at it this way. And so in the gene pool of the cell, or the nucleus of the cell, the DNA unzips itself, and then RNA mimics it. See? And then
and then
it forms the next DNA over the RNA, then the RNA moves, and then the new strand of DNA re-zips itself. So the DNA, which is not a cell, see?
Okay.
It's just DNA, is replicating in the nucleus.
Yeah.
So they believe there was a gene pool filled with DNA,
right there,
with genes, see? That was like a big nucleus,
right,
and it just kept genes, or DNA just kept replicating within that pool,
right,
but there were no cells.
Kevin says,
wow.
So it's just small strands of DNA, like little chromosomes floating around.
Right,
independent
right.
Independent of a host organism.
That's correct.
Strands of recombinant DNA.
That's right.
Got affected by sunlight and Earth's magnetic fields,
yes,
etc.
Right. So we have 22
what?
Chromosomes.
What?
See, what did he say? Without a host organism? What
yeah.
Right before that?
Independent
what,
of a host organism.
What was independent of a host organism?
Yeah. We have 23, I think.
20, yeah, then sex chromosome. 23 pairs. What did he say right before
wait,
that?
Wait. Like little chromosomes floating around.
Right, right.
Independent of a host organism.
Right. So we have 20... Are those
Collenbeck.
Are those called chromosomes? The 22 pairs or 23
yes.
pairs of chromosomes?
Yes.
Right. So all the chromosomes are these other shorter stub chromosomes are just all independent of a host organism. Get it?
Okay.
Okay, and that's the key, is that the organism's a host organism for the DNA. Get it? So the organism isn't the thing that's important, it's that the organism's a host for the DNA. And the DNA groups, we have 22 pairs plus the sex chromosome, and then our organism's a host for that DNA.
Mm-hmm.
See? So what was happening is that because of the environmental factors, the DNA, these loose chromosomes, weren't packed together. Like the chimpanzee has different chromosomes, and the fish has different chromosomes than we do. See? And they weren't inside cells. They were inside a gene pool. It was just like a big nucleus. So in those chromosomes, floating around in this pool, a pre-organism or cell, they would share successful strands of DNA that would survive. So all the DNA would, all the chromosomes, the DNA would reproduce itself, and a lot of them would die. They couldn't withstand the tests and the rigors of the gene pool. But the other ones would survive the tests and rigors of the gene pool. And when they survived, they'd share genetic information with the other chromosomes swimming around in the gene pool, and they would cross-pollinate each other or whatever with these little substrands of coded or uncoded, whatever, DNA. And they were sending information back and forth to each other, and as these were dying out and these were surviving, they were sending the information back and forth. And this went on for quite a long time, until a certain substructure of DNA evolved that could withstand the rigors of the environment of the gene pool. See? And once all of this happened, later they entered into host organisms. Then proteins were then manufactured by the genes to shield themselves from the environmental factors. And these were the nucleuses. And then substructures were formed to protect their survival, which were the cell structures. And these formed single-cell organisms. Now, at the point that they formed single-cell organisms, now you're looking at a certain strands of chromosomes of DNA in the nucleus of a single cell structure that's now hosting 22 pairs, 23 pairs, 16 pairs. Each one's different, and some of these are surviving, and some of these aren't. And they're still cross-sharing genetic information with each other. See? This went on for a certain allotted period of time. Okay, so in the Bible it says that God created male and female and called their name Adam, and that then who's Eve? The soul. And that this is on one of Adam's ribs. Well, Doc explained that the rib is a chromosome. And that there's a genome on one of the chromosomes of our 22 pairs, plus the sex chromosome would be 23. But I usually say 22 plus that one, you know. But anyway, so 43 pairs. And that one of these genomes, which is just one little genome, like I don't know how many DNA strands or whatever, or coding, you know, would be. Might be in the uncoded section, but there's a little piece there. And that's what Eve's attracted to on Adam's rib. And Eve's the soul. See, this breath that's attracted to when the sperm of the mother father comes in contact with the ovum of the mother, this is what the soul's attracted to. Okay, well, this existed in the gene pool. That not only were all of these different DNAs there outside of cell structures, but amongst these rogue chromosomes floating around in this big gene pool before nucleuses were formed that capture what was happening in the gene pool. What's called prokaryote?
The single-celled things that have no nucleus for the DNA. They're called prokaryotes.
Right, but where's the DNA before it was in a cell? Just loose DNA in a big pool.
They're not saying that. They're saying the first thing were these single-celled organisms.
That didn't have DNA?
And they had the DNA in them.
And then what did they do?
And then eventually eukaryotes developed.
What's
and those
that?
Are the cells that have the mitochondria or
the nucleus.
The ribosomes and the nucleus. Yeah.
Right, so at first prokaryotes didn't have a nucleus, and then eukaryotes had a nucleus.
Yeah.
But
and
wait,
the bacteria and stuff today and blue green algae is still the prokaryotes.
Meaning they don't have a nucleus.
Yeah.
Right.
They just have the DNA in there.
Right.
Yeah.
See, but if the DNA's in it, that was the nucleus. They kind of got. They have to figure this out a little bit more. They're not doing so good, but anyway, so before even the prokaryote, that you had the gene pool and the genes were just. It was like a big nucleus. Then later they formed a layer of protection around themselves, which is prokaryote, and then if they evolved the double layer with the nucleus, then they became eukaryote. See, but before they were even in that stage of prokaryote, they were still sharing genetic information with each other for quite a while. They're getting to the point where they can figure this out. Okay, here's the point. That on one of these chromosomes, this is that we still have, which is Adam's rib, the soul's attracted to this. So in the gene pool, let's say it was 4 genetic bonds, just to pick some arbitrary number that might have meaning, or 7, or just pick some magic number, you know, I'll stick with 4. So you had these, so if there were 4 of them, they had to have 2 pairs. You know, somewhere in that structure, or maybe it was longer or more complex, the soul was attracted to this then. So as these DNA were zipping and unzipping and dying and reproducing, some of these had souls attached to them. And some of them didn't, see? And so, but the soul can't exist except if it has to evolve into the most perfect form, which it's in today. So whatever it was that we originally came from, see, that this was the structure that could survive the best, see? So this little strand that the soul's attached to became hosted inside a prokaryote, a eukaryote, with 22 other chromosomes, see? And the soul was in that one, but it wasn't in the other host, and host is a good word, see? So we are actually... Our body, our physical body, is animalian. We've never denied that. We exist because of the animal kingdom. And so we're most closely related, they think, because they haven't done the code, uncoded stuff, to these apes and the chimps, you know, because of the coding DNA that they've done and the way we look outwardly, see? But certainly the way we look outwardly looks similar or phenotype to these apes, you know, but genetically, if they code the uncoded part, it might turn out that we have more in common with the dolphin than we do with the great ape. We don't know genetically.
Could Kevin has some interesting.
So what this shows us is that I'm almost done. So what this shows us is that we're not stuck with if we had a common physiological ancestor with some certain species, that we know that we're mammals. Our body's a mammalian body, and they believe now it's closest to the apes and the chimpanzee. But we, our soul itself, is hosted by this host entity. Isn't that interesting? It has nothing to do with this. We could be, look, if conditions were different, we could be hosted by a reptilian entity. That whatever happened in the gene pool that said this entity is the thing that's going to survive best in this environment, that's the one that our chromosome that had the soul on it packed up with when it formed the prokaryote and eukaryote structure that eventually then started reproducing and growing into this form that was destined by in the gene pool. The formation of it happened in the gene pool. See? Now we could be in a fish body if that would have been the thing that it would have suggested in the gene pool would have been highest survivability on this world. But for this world and this cycle, it was mammalian. Yeah, and so that's why we're hosted in this current form. Yeah, this current form has almost nothing to do with us. So, but our soul has an effect on this form too.
It must be the same chromosome, too, that makes us develop the intellect.
Yeah.
Because it's connected to the intellect.
Yeah.
So whatever does that, that must be...
And the hyoid bone, which causes us to have speech.
Oh, yeah. The chimpanzees just don't have that.
No.
They cannot
it's a hyoid bone.
Yeah. Oh, it causes speech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how we can talk. We have a hyoid bone. What they need to do is genetically mutate the great apes to have hyoid bone so they can start speaking. Mm-hmm. If, once they give a dog a hyoid bone, instead of going, woof, woof, it'll be like, I want to go out. You know, it'll be able to say a few other words. You can give it a highlight bone.
I don't want to hear Bender chugging. I know.
Yeah. Take a poop. Oh, this is a great poop. It's like, you can barely train your kid to talk appropriately.
I'll tell you right now. Take me for a walk. Take me for a walk. Take me for a walk. Take me for a walk.
We can barely get Baruch to stop repeating himself. Little kid to stop repeating. Okay, let's get feedback at this point from Colin and Kevin. We'll start with Kevin.
Well, one interesting thing Kevin points out when you were talking about the development of the chromosomes.
Yeah.
He points out that it was the amino acids that came first.
Right.
And the amino acids come together to make the DNA, which make the chromosomes.
Right.
Like a chromosome itself has tons of DNA in it.
Right.
Like there's all these little locuses.
Uh-huh.
That is a DNA strand.
Right.
And that's built by amino acids.
Right. Now, how many amino acids are there?
That's another interesting thing that he points out. He says there's 22.
That's right.
The same amount of chromosomes.
Right.
Yeah. It,
that's why I stick with 22. Now, how many letters are there in the Hebrew alphabet, Kevin?
Did you hear us, Kevin?
Thank
22,
you,
he says.
That's right. So that's where we're going to go next. But first, let's finish talking about the physical side of this. Then we'll get to the spiritual side.
And then he says something else.
Yeah, so there, did you know there's only 22 basic amino acids that make us up? And there's only 4 of them that form the base pairs out of those 22.
No, I mean, the base pairs aren't
Shut
amino
the door.
Acids.
What? Well, ask Kevin.
No, they're not.
What are they?
They're little nucleotides. They're like... It takes 3 to make an amino acid.
What?
3 nucleotides to make an amino acid?
Yeah.
So the base pairs are nucleotides?
You got to explain the structure of this. You got to start with...
Let me show you a picture.
Huh. Yeah. Once you understand this, is that's right, it takes 3. That all the 22 amino acids are combinations of 3 of these things. And how many of those things are? Yeah, I can't. I'm doing all this from memory.
Here's the DNA spiral. This makes the spiral. That's the rungs. There's the ladder. That's a nucleotide. That's adenine, cytosine, thymine, guanine.
Took you off, Reg?
See?
Three
of those. 3 of these.
Uh-huh.
That makes an amino acid.
Right, right. So there's 22 amino acids.
Yeah.
Here, go and sit there. Help the kids first.
Reg,
go help
take
the kids.
You off?
Kevin says there's 3 key aminos that get together to make 5 more.
What?
Then make the rest of the 22.
Yeah, how many?
Sure.
3 key aminos that get together to make 5 more, which make the rest of the 22.
Well, he's calling them aminos.
He's talking about the threes.
The threes are aminos.
He's typing. We should just let him talk.
Yeah, put him on and let him talk for
here,
a while.
Here, Kevin, talk.
Are we still on, too? So I'm going to ask
Kevin
a couple of questions.
Kevin, talk instead. Quit typing. Lysine, methionine, tryptophan.
Tryptophan.
Hey, you guys, can you hear me?
Yeah.
You go help the kids.
Okay, so those three limiting amino acids, they can make the other five, which make the eight essentials. And that makes the other 22. So if you eat enough food that has lysine, methionine, cysteine, which are two that appear together all the time, they don't do anything independently, those two.
Okay, but isn't thymine one of the base pairs?
No, methionine.
Oh. Okay, well, adenine, guanine... Oh, okay, adenine, guanine, thymine, and cytosine. What are those called?
Those would be four of the five more eight essentials.
Essential what?
Essential amino acids.
She's claiming they're not the amino acids. She says it takes three of those to form an amino acid.
No, those are amino acids. Lysine, methionine, and tryptophan.
No, they're calling these bases. These bases are adenine, guanine, thymine, and cytosine. Are those amino acids or bases? See, he's saying they're amino acids.
No, they're not. They're not.
Well, look it up on Wikipedia so we can continue with the discussion here. You got to get your facts straight.
Here, hang on.
Anyway, there's 22 amino acids. Here, turn down the volume, will you? You guys can come back on and you fix this. So there's 22 of these amino acids, and they're formed by building blocks. These building blocks, four of those building blocks are the foundation of our DNA. And that's why they're called bases. They're like the bases for these 22 amino acids. So, for instance, we could have a DNA structure based on five base pairs. We could have our base pairs that form our DNA could be the other 23 amino acids.
Amino acids. Here's these nucleotides. What's three of those. That's a codon. That makes an amino acid. Right. See, three. AUG is a particular amino acid on here.
Right. So what forms the amino acids? What's U? A, G, C.
That will be uracil, yeah. Adenine,
what's
and guanine.
What's uracil?
When the...
No, what is it? Is it a base? What's it called?
Yeah, it's a base.
Is it chicken?
It's what? The thymine base that's on ribosomal DNA.
Yeah, but it's not thymine. RNA. It's uracil. What's it called?
Uracil.
Yeah, but what is it?
It's not an amino acid. It's like a nucleotide.
What's a nucleotide? It's a base. One thing is called a nucleotide?
Well, a nucleotide is one of these... paired with a phosphate and another thing.
No. But what is it without paired to a phosphate and another thing? Just what is it in and of itself?
They're just calling it the base pair.
Well, it's called something. That's what this is all about, is naming things phylum and class and atom and proton and neutron. Look, like if we wanted to talk
this
about...
This thing's saying nucleotide's a molecule.
Yeah, it's a molecule.
They're molecules. A nucleotide's one molecule?
It's a phosphate, a sugar, and then one base group.
Base what? See, what's the base group called? It is a molecule, but it's a molecule. It's got a special name.
Nucleobase.
Is that what it is?
Nitrogenous base.
And how many nitrogenous bases are there?
It's a base.
How many bases are there?
There's four.
No, there's not. There's uracil.
Yeah, there's five.
Oh, no, but there's another
DNA,
one.
In DNA, there's only four. See? Listen. In DNA, there's four. Thymine, guanine, cytosine, and the other one.
Right. And then in ribosome...
And then when it copies...
In RNA...
When it unzips...
Right. RNA.
And the RNA comes in on
right.
it.
Right.
On RNA, there's no thymine.
Right.
There's only uracil.
Right. That's the fifth
place.
One. And there's more than five. They're just not used in DNA. Whatever those molecules are called, there's more than five of them.
They're not molecules. They're base.
There's a name for them, and there's more of them.
Kevin says, now you're talking about the building blocks from the mineral kingdom that make the aminos.
Well, no, I want to go there next. We're going to go there.
He's saying they're minerals.
What's a mineral?
Kevin's saying that the bases are.
No, they're molecules.
They're not molecules.
There's a molecule is an atomic. Water is a molecule.
But he said the nucleotide's a molecule.
What's a nucleotide?
When the base.
Wait. What's a nucleotide?
It's the base paired with a sugar and a phosphate.
Right. What is the base without the sugar and the phosphate called?
A base.
A nuclear base.
There's no name for it.
I just want a word so I can talk.
Nucleobase.
See? What does yours say? I just want us all on the same page.
Paul is typing, thank God.
That's why he's here.
Cytosine, guanine, adenine, thymine, and uracil.
Fine. What are those?
We got that, Colin. We know they're nucleotides.
Nucleobases. They're usually simply called bases in genetics.
Okay, aren't there more than
these
five?
These molecules are called DNA bases.
Colin Suey's saying that they are called nucleotides.
But I want to know what they're called without the sugar.
Colin, without the phosphate and the sugar, that the nucleotide is the base with the phosphate and the sugar. He wants to know what the base is called with no phosphate and no sugar.
And Colin O'Brien's saying, go ahead, Colin.
I'm just saying that in Wikipedia they're calling them a nucleobase.
Yeah, that they're just a nucleobase.
Right.
There's five nucleobases. And they're molecules, right?
Yeah.
Right.
The list is saying that the main ones are those five.
That's what I'm telling you. There's more than five of these. How many of the others are there? What's the total?
Apart from these, also contain bases that have been modified after the nucleic acid chain has been formed. The most common modified base is 5-methylcytidine.
Is that with the sugars, though?
Kevin says protoplasm.
In RNA, there are many modified bases, including pseudouridine, dihydrouridine, inosine, ribothymidine.
See, there's more of them. They're nuclear bases.
There's not in the DNA. Them, right?
Well, there's 22 amino acids. The amino acids that we use are formed by five ones in our DNA. Combined in threes.
Guanine, cytosine, adenine, and thymine.
And uracil. Those five group together in groups of three and form 22 amino acids.
Colin Suey wants to know why you want to know.
Huh? Because
why does it matter?
What?
I'm putting these words in his mouth, but he says why.
Huh? Well, I'll explain it in a minute. But the key is the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. There's 22 amino acids and 22 human chromosomes, and these nucleobases that form the amino acids, I think it's the five that form the 22 amino acids. But there's more of those bases also. And we only happen to be formed with these five.
Mm-hmm.
See, or four. It's really four, and one of them switched a little.
Yeah.
Okay, this pattern is in the language and of the alphabet that God used to give his revelation. This is the deep level where science and revelation correspond. But you have to know the science on it accurately before you can look at how... And I want to move into the other part next, but I don't want to muck it up. I know you're taping all this. You're going to have to edit it all down until we get what's right. You just have to clip it all out until we get to what the things are.
Our bunk science class.
Our bunk science class. Well, they're still understanding this stuff. So what were those? So there's other nuclear bases, right? But we don't use them. They could be used, but they're not. See, on other planets, or in other environments, rather, they might have, even on the Earth's history, in prior cycles of the Earth's history, in different environments, other nuclear bases might have been used. But we want to focus on the one that is being used now. Are we on the same page? Then would those guys agree, or we'll leave it open for further investigation?
He said, "Tell Neil it might sound crazy, but he might get something worthwhile out of the charts on aminos and Hebrew letters in the odd book, the Keys of Enoch. It's in the storage unit."
Oh, he did this too, huh?
And then Colin Suey says, "Amino acids are the monomers of proteins. If that helps."
But do we agree there's only 22 of them?
Do we agree there's 22 amino acids?
And the amino acids are formed of the five nucleotides in combinations of three. I wonder if they're completely permeated or not.
Permeated?
Yeah, well, permutation is if you have five things and you exhaust how you can combine them in groups of three. I wonder if you only result with 22. Without repetition, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or if sequence counts, you get more. So those are called combinations and permutations.
Sure.
And that's what the Kabbalah is all about, is taking the Hebrew letters. If you take the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet and permutate them uniquely, I think you get 232. Hmm. Or 231 combination, something like
both
that.
Both Colin and Kevin agree that there are 22 aminos.
All right, so you can look the rest of this up later. I want to move forward. So anyway, that the for some reason or another, that you have all of these potential nuclear bases,
nucleobases, or base pairs,
but there's only four of them: cytosine,
guanine.
Thymine and adenine. Now these four are only composed of four of the elements from the mineral kingdom. Only. And that's what he said Chan was.
Chan.
Carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen. Now the funny thing about those four elements that these nucleotide bases are formed from, before the sugars and the whatever she called. What was the other thing?
Phosphate.
The phosphate is added in. Now, the phosphate is phosphorus. It's light activated. So it's kind of like a photosynthesis thing where we can take energy from the sun and immediately, phosphorus can immediately use that to use the sugar as fuel to burn it up for like a primitive metabolism or something like this. So it's a so the phosphate and the sugar is very interesting also. Is the sugar a benzene ring?
I don't know.
Do those guys online?
Is the sugar a benzene ring?
Those are the carbon rings? Is that what a benzene ring is?
Valensui is typing.
Yeah.
Benzene is part of the makeup of DNA.
The DNA bonds with a phosphate and a sugar.
He says a ring, but not a benzene.
What's a benzene ring different from the other ring?
Isn't How does benzene it differ, like Colin? Petroleum or whatever?
Poisonous. It's highly poisonous.
Oh. It's a carbon ring, and that's what it is?
Typing. Benzene is C6H6 with three double bonds and a carcinogen.
And it mimics estrogen.
Does it? And what about the ring and the sugar?
What's the ring and the sugar in the DNA?
Yeah, that the DNA is. That's a ring, though.
I know what it's. I can tell you what it's called.
There's some scientists.
He just produces that from his mind.
Well, he's a scientist. There was a guy
sugar
that.
Sugar rings have five carbons and an oxygen.
Yeah, no, I heard that the guy that. One of the scientists before he discovered these rings.
It tastes yummy.
Had a dream of the snake biting its own tail.
Huh.
Like he dreamt about the Ouroboros or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then later he discovered these sugar rings.
Hmm.
Did Colin Sui heard that? We'll leave that sugar and phosphate discussion for another time. What?
Ouroboros?
Yeah, that's the snake biting its tail. Anyway, that's an ancient symbol too. But anyway, if you look at the base pair, it's made of carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen, Chan. And so, out of all the 108 or more elements, only three of them end with the word gen for Genesis. Oxygen, nitrogen, and hydrogen.
Yeah. They're saying the sugar is a deoxyribose sugar.
Oh, okay. Is it a ring? So when they originally tried to discover the elements, and they weren't in any order. Later on, that guy, the guy that put it in the periodic table, the elements, Colin Sui, know his name too. He's looking at what they have similar. Based on the way they reacted with other stuff, he put them in columns. And then based on how fast they reacted, he put them in the rows. And he was able to discover that there were missing spots. And he then said, if this pattern's correct, these places where we're missing spots, there should be other actual elements. And then later they found these. And then they were able to put them in the missing spots. And this is before they had the electron microscope to be able to see exactly what these look like. So like lithium, sodium, and potassium are in one column. And those were called families or whatever. And then it just turned out that they wound up being, according to the seven structures and the octave according to going across, and there were seven levels. So it was basically a 7x7 structure, which is 49 things, you know, or like the seven seals, like in the book of Revelation. So they could see that the way it says God created the earth in 7 days and on the eighth day he rested, or 6 days and on the seventh day he rested, or the seven tones of the music scale, the octave repeats, were this musical analogy was mimicked in the structure of the periodic table of the elements. And then it made them wonder if the ancient people had known about this when the revelations were given, because these were some of the sacred numbers that were in there. So anyway, when they discovered them, the reason they named oxygen, hydrogen, and nitrogen this is it means producing. So they believe that hydrogen, hydro means water, and gen is Genesis. They believe that that was water producing. And then oxygen, they thought was acidic, and they thought that meant acid producing. Oxy actually means acid or dissolving. And nitrogen, they thought meant air producing or one of these other things. So it turns out that this is true, that these three mimic, and plus carbon, the four ancient elements that Baha'u'llah mentions in the Tablet of Hikmah, the Tablet of Wisdom, which is the earth, water, air, and fire. That when stuff burns, it combines with oxygen. So when iron rusts, it becomes red because it's combining with oxygen. So oxygen represents fire. And then nitrogen is the majority of what our air is made out of. So this represents air. And then hydrogen represents water, and carbon represents earth. And these four atomic elements are the ones chosen, I don't know how, out of all of the 108 or more of them to be the only ones that combine to form the molecules of four base pairs. So these four base pairs are based on these four elements. And this is the switch between the mineral kingdom and life, the vegetable and animal kingdom, between inorganic and organic chemistry switches with the formation of the amino acids. And the amino acids are based on, the 22 of them are based on these four things. And this is what it says in the ancient alphabet, is that there were 22 letters, but four of them were chosen. Three of them were chosen to be represent three of the letters of the name of God. And the fourth one was a repetition of the third one, and the amino acids are like this. The amino acids are groups of three that form the 22 foundational structure of life, with four of these being the name that God is, the name of God, that are based upon the name of God. So this is where the connection between the coming of life on our earth and the revelation that Adam gives to what we know to be the letters that spell light, B-H-A-N-A, or not Y-H-V-H, but the B-H-A of the Most Great Name, fit in with the ones that have to do with the four minerals and then the four nucleotides, or whatever you want to call them, base pairs that form all life on this planet. That everything we see before us that's not a mineral, whether it's a plant or an animal or a person, is just repetitious combinations of these four letters of the Most Great Name of God reflected in the DNA. That if we knew more about what those missing base pairs were, this would make a little bit more sense.
Kevin, you know, says something interesting.
Okay, here. Yeah, go ahead.
He says, I have a really cool SEM photo of a cellular cross-section of a human nerve cell that is round, and inside has a perfect nine-pointed star with a perfect Persian letter Ha at the end of each point, and is specific to transference of info from cell to cell along the nerve path.
Is he sure that's human? Because I've seen a picture like that before, and I thought it was a flagella from some sort of other creature.
Then he says, the American Indian's cosmology says the foundation of the world is four.
Yeah, this is where this comes from. Moving from genotype to phenotype, we have two arms and two legs.
He said, so they say.
Okay. So this is shown in our outer structure, where we have two arms and two legs, which are our four supports that support our head, which is our abstract thought. So this is why they have us in the animal kingdom. They see that our body is similar genetically or structurally to like these apes or whatever it is. But they don't take into account that we're hosted, that these are the hosts of this abstract power that we have, which exists in this other kingdom. They're being materialists. They discount the spirituality of the individual or the psychology of the individual, you know. They just try to look at animals, how they group together and have society, or how bees have, or ants have civilization and structure, and then they have animal psychology, and then they try to extrapolate off of that to see what we're up to, where they don't take into account the coming of the manifestation or our capacity in the human kingdom to represent, to recognize the kingdom beyond that, which is the kingdom of God. But somehow this has been imprinted upon, you know, the foundation of our greatest scientific thinking. Today is only recompounded or reconfirmed this ancient teaching that all of creation is fashion, the fashioner, on the manifestation of the letters of the name of God. Which, by the way, is the fourth commandment, the name. You know. Mm-hmm. Then the keep the Sabbath day holy, if you count backwards, is the seventh commandment. It's the third one down, but it's the seventh last. Mm. You know.
Kevin says, not that plants have nerves, but it appears in their communicative cells as well.
That's where I've seen it, yeah.
And then he said, reflecting on that gave special existence to a Yamaha for me this year.
He should post the picture in the listserv so everybody can see it.
You post it to the listserv, Kevin?
Well, that's tonight's presentation, if there's feedback.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's, well, these people spend their whole life researching genetics and DNA.
Mm-hmm. It's in the storage unit in the file cabinet.
What?
The picture.
Oh, isn't it on the internet?
Isn't it on the internet?
I don't know if he can hear you any better over there.
Okay.
Do you have a separate mic over there?
No.
I'm just repeating it.
Yeah.
He's talking to this.
That means he's supposed to respond if I chime in.
Yeah.
He's going to look tonight.
Do it. Just call it Sue. Want to add anything?
He chimed in that the three base pairs that code for a specific amino acid.
Right. But it's three of the five, right?
Yeah.
Not more than those. It's only one of those five. Yeah. Why? And all of a sudden you're up to five. And that's really the structure that we're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's because of the head and the
arms. Yeah, because we have the four of the foundation, but then our head is like this, is what's sported.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one is a mutation off the thiamine, uracil, that has to do with the RNA. So really, you have DNA and RNA. They're basically identical, but for somehow, all RNA does is help DNA replicate. They're like male and female nucleic acids, where one actually carries the information, and the other one just helps reproduce it.
So are you saying our head is the phosphate?
Yeah. The phosphate is... you can correct me, but my understanding is the sugar's the fuel, and the phosphate's the fire, which causes it to reproduce. Because light acts upon the phosphate, doesn't it?
They've got a pretty detailed explanation of what happens with that sugar and phosphate.
What's it say?
Inside Wikipedia.
Tell us.
It says deoxyribose, more precisely 2-deoxyribose, is an organic compound with formula C5H10O4, specifically a monosaccharide with linear form H, C equals O, CH2, CHO23, H.
The sad part is I'm following all this.
Which has all the hydroxyl groups on the same side in the Fischer projection. It is also a deoxy sugar that can be seen as derived from sugar ribose by loss of an oxygen atom, hence the name. The term 2-deoxyribose may refer to any of the two enantiomers. The biologically important 2-deoxyribose covered here and rarely its synthetic mirror image, LDI.
But where does it say what the sugar and the phosphorus does?
Okay, so the biological importance. 2-deoxyribose derivatives have an important role in biology. The DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid molecule, which is the main repository of genetic information in bacteria and higher organisms, is a double helix, each of whose strands is a long chain of deoxyribose-containing units called nucleosides. They say sides here.
Okay.
Alternating with phosphate groups. In the standard nucleic acid nomenclature, a DNA nucleoside consists of deoxyribose molecule with an organic base, usually adenine, thymine, guanine, or cytosine, attached to a one little mark, whatever is that supposed to mean, ribose carbon. The 5-hydroxyl of each deoxyribose unit is replaced by a phosphate, forming a nucleotide, that is, attached to the 3-carbon of the deoxyribose in the preceding unit. Therefore, the last unit has a phosphate bound only to a 5-carbon, and the first unit has a free OH group bound to the 3-carbon. The two strands of DNA have oppositely oriented backbones and are held together by hydrogen bonds with complementary bases. The genetic information carried by the DNA is encoded in the sequence of bases along the chain.
Yeah, but in cell reproduction, the sugars are burned and the phosphates used to bring in energy. Remember that?
I wonder. I don't know.
That was what you had in your textbook on cell reproduction.
This time around?
No, the other
way
time.
Way before, yeah.
That's what they kept saying, that the cells were doing these things. And it was like, well, where are they getting all their energy from? The text wouldn't say.
They were burning up the sugar?
Yeah, they were burning up the sugar through the phosphate
somehow.
That's
probably right.
That's what was happening. But these were also in the DNA on one level. And that's how the proteins were being formed, for the cells to start splitting. They were taking in oxygen. Was coming in on a molecular level, and each molecule was being transferred back and forth that was causing this growth and reproduction to take place at the cellular level.
Okay, here's what Colin Suey says.
Okay.
Although we can use sugar for fuel, and phosphorescence is glowing, the sugars that the phosphates bond on the backbone to hold together the AGCT base pair. Huh? And then he says, yes, the ATP is the energy source of the cell.
Yeah, ATP, that was what it was.
What's ATP?
That's the energy source of the cell. Mm. What does ATP stand for? Look up ATP.
He's typing.
All right. Anyway, if you examine this and you understand it with the letters of this name, it starts getting weird.
Adenosine triphosphate.
Well, how can everything that's alive be combinations of four things?
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, you know, like here I am talking, and I'm just another combination and permutation of four things. Mm-hmm. Like on a subatomic level, you know, on a molecular level. Carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen. Then this molecular pairs, and then all of this. Mm-hmm. See? It's like the resolution we're talking about. Like when Reg get into it, you get into the pixelation of it, like the pixelation of what do they call that? Who's that physicist? But his name begins with H. The Planck length. Yeah, the Planck length, the quantum leap.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's the pixelation of oxygen, hydrogen, carbon, and nitrogen.
Yeah.
So at that pixelated level, they then form these four base pairs of DNA, and that's how biological life exists. And they're held in a semi-structure based on chon, carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen, which are based on the four letters of the great name of God, and that these maintain a stability because of what Baha'u'llah calls the fashioner. By God's name, the fashioner, you know, that this exists. And it's held into existence because these letters are grouped together in a certain order because of the spirit behind the name of God. And that's how this is a mirror of that, you know. And yet they remain in this vibratory way in our DNA in every cell in our body. Okay? So you're a completely different existence than me. Like, we have a lot in common, but yet you're just a combination. Your physical appearance is a combination of these four things. And that's all, just four.
That's crazy.
Four things. How can you just think? It's like taking the number, you know, you're taking the number 1, 2, and 5, you know, and then repeating 1 in a different form. And then, so it's really almost three, where the fourth one's a repetition. And then just, it creates all these things.
Colin says, don't forget that carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen are all made of protons, neutrons, and electrons.
Right, with the Planck length and all that. But when you cross over to the nucleotides, they're considered alive. Whereas before that, they're inorganic. And in our common ancestors, the gene pool, and not an actual organism. And that our soul exists on one of these genomes, on a chromosome, that chose to inhabit survive by being a symbiont in the most survivable host structure. It's the most survivable or adaptable host structure. Yeah. Of this planet.
Some planet, isn't it?
That's pretty complicated. But if you can see it as being these four things, how can it get so complicated? How can that much information be contained on four things? Like, how can those four things just recombine over and over again to the point where it says you'll have blue eyes or brown eyes?
How many combinations, how many possible combinations in four?
Well, it becomes a building block. Like, your skyscraper is made out of bricks, you know. There's a lot of bricks in the building.
Yeah.
The whole building could be, many different buildings could be different shapes. They're all made out of the same bricks, somehow. But in the case of DNA, that they all know what the next one should look like, you know. Like, how does the cell know it's a liver cell and not a skin cell?
I don't know. Doesn't it seems like there's, that's part of the controversy right now.
Yeah.
And this guy that you were talking about, Sheldrake, seems to have come up with an idea about that.
Yeah, I like his idea.
That I like.
Yeah. The morphogenic fields.
Yeah.
So then in our human body, we have nine independent systems hidden inside. So then these different DNA know that which system they belong to. Then within each system, they produce the morphogenic field to form the central nervous system, the circulation, you know, the heart and circulatory system, or the muscular system. And then each one of these corresponds with one of the nine manifestations.
Let's not play instruments and stuff.
So those nine systems that form us inwardly are like a mirror image of the coming of the nine revelators of the Adamic cycle. So this pattern is repeated over and over again, where we have the four letters of the name. The Kabbalah tree has four worlds associated with each letter. And Abdu'l-Bahá says 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 is 10. And that 10 is the nine manifestations, and then the entire unity of the whole form is the 10th thing. So 4 becomes 10, or the 9 of the 1, which is the 9 inward systems of the single outer body. That's how 4 comes to 10, or 9.
Kevin mentions that new organs and fingers and limbs can be grown from your own stem cells.
Oh.
It's been done. A guy got fingers he had cut off, grown back new and whole.
Yeah, stem cells don't belong to any one of the nine systems yet. They're differentiated.
Didn't they figure out a way to derive stem cells from a source that wouldn't require the death of a fetus?
Yeah, I heard there was two different ways they could do it. One, they could keep the placenta or the blood from the newborn, so it wouldn't affect the newborn. There's stem cells in that original blood.
In the cord.
Yeah, then there might be another way where they can take a person and strip a regular cell into a stem cell. So they don't even need to do it that other way. And I think the ancient practitioners of this that used stem cells, they were often accused of stealing babies and stuff like this. I think they were keeping the placenta and the placenta blood to do stem cell research in ancient times without affecting the actual baby.
Kevin's claiming they did this.
That's why these legends come down from medieval times.
From this guy's own cells from his adult body.
Yeah, that's...
No outside source.
Yeah, there's a way to strip down modern cells they figured out into stem cells now. Hmm. Where they don't need to do anything with infants anymore.
Then why are they still doing it?
Well, the way they figured out how to strip down the adult cells was by playing around with the other cells.
Well, they should stop immediately then.
Well, they don't even need to do it with babies. They can use the placenta blood in the umbilical cord. Yeah. So, undoubtedly they're doing something else with aborted fetuses for some other ghoulish practice, you know. And if, in the future, the House of Justice will regulate all this. See, once they figure out what the uncoded DNA does, then we're in trouble.
Kevin says that's why saving their babies' placentas.
Yeah, for stem cells for their baby.
Colin says human embryonic stem cells were first isolated in 1998 by scientists in Wisconsin.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There are scientists in Wisconsin?
Apparently they're embryologists.
Colin said he's there.
So what percentage of human DNA is uncoded and what percentage is coded? Does he know? Do you know?
He says, hey, Doc's from Wisconsin. Better watch it.
He wasn't.
Wasn't he? He was from Racine, Wisconsin.
He was born in Burlington, Wisconsin.
Doc was? Yeah. Burlington,
Mason Wisconsin. Was born in Burlington, Iowa.
Wow.
They were both born in Burlington.
Really?
Remember, we used to see the Burlington commercials on TV, and they would weave a Burlington weave. They'd go dun 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 dun. They would do this warp and woof pattern.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And one was the warp and one was the woof, and they'd come together with this dramatic noise. And when I was a kid, I was just always, like, stunned by that image of the warp and woof coming together with the drums. And then that was, then they go, Burlington. And then it would stop. And later it turns out it's Doc's born in Burlington and Mason's born into Burlington, and this is the warp and woof of the whole... Isn't that a funny image?
It is.
Do you remember those Burlington ads?
No, I don't.
Oh.
I mean, I have a kind of a recollection of something like that.
Well, hopefully you can take out that big argumentation in the middle and you can get something on DNA and the four letters of the name out of it by cleaning it up. Yeah. That big wrangle you don't need in there.
I want to leave that argumentation in there. I think that that's an essential.
Well, it's up to you. Just some of it's positive and not distracting. So what do you think of all that stuff? You want to become a molecular biologist now?
Oh my God.
He wants to go to bed now. Yeah.
I know, it just puts me right down.
Is it pretty
petty?
It's so like nucleotides.
It's just like the subject in school just like drove me nuts.
What?
The subject in school.
This subject?
Yeah, that I just...
You're going to have to take a biology class. Am you're going to have to study this crap. It's going to drive you nuts.
I didn't like it then. Never really.
Oh, you have to take it again in college?
It's really easy to understand if you have take math and you take combinatorics.
Yeah. And
if you learn combination, permutation, factorial, it's a mathematics class called combinatorics. I have the textbook in the other room.
Yeah, like you're ever gonna
but
use
for instance, we have let's say 24. See,
so you should get the Keys of Enoch book, and I have to go to bed.
24 is based on 4. That if you take 4 things, like the 4 letters, and you let's say you have 1, 2, 3, and 4 as numbers. And so you could order them as 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 3, 2, 4.
Right.
See what I mean?
Right.
And so if the order doesn't matter, how many? What's the permutation you can get out of 4 things? Uh-huh. And you can get 24 things. Uh-huh. I think that works. Uh-huh. And there's a way to figure that out using probability.
Yeah.
What's 1 times 2 times 3 times 4?
1 times 2 is 2, 2 times 3 is 6, 6 times 4 is 24.
There you go, I'm glad you remember.
Yeah, so that's called factorial. If you multiply them together, that's a factorial. They'll write it like this, 4 exclamation point.
Oh.
So when you see 4 exclamation point, that means multiply 1 through 4. You see 5 factorial, 5 exclamation point, 1. That's the notation.
Mm-hmm.
So they use these shorthand notation for this. Mm-hmm. So 4 factorial is 24. So the 4 letters of the most great name, taken as factorial, produces the 24 elders.
That's a trip. That's a real
Wait,
trip.
What? Repeat that.
So there's 24 people alive in the world that are the factorial of the letters of Baha. You know?
Okay.
Well, yeah. I mean, if the name's now complete, you know.
Is Colin still on?
I don't know. I say goodnight to everybody.
Okay.
So go ahead and log off. Well, I just said the forum was over now, so I was, this is the afterglow, I guess.
What do you mean?
So, yeah. Oh, and then, according to this one book I have, but I couldn't find the scientific paper it was based on, because I didn't do enough research on it. If you drop one drop of milk, you know, in an eyedropper into some milk, it'll disappear. It'll be absorbed into the milk, but the reaction will be another drop will splash back up. And 24 others will splash up around it, forming a crown. And that's the vision of the Book of Revelations. I saw a throne and surrounded by 24 other thrones.
Wow.
See you, Reg. Good night. So if you take the name of God as the original or originator of this, and you drop that in there, and it's, you know, then it produces a 24 factorial.
See?
And this is what it said that David sat on the throne of YHVH. So the throne's represented by the 4 letters, you know, or Baha, you know. And then there's the other elders. Just a fact of physics that'll form a crown like that.
Shall I leave this?
Oh. I've written about that. But anyway, it forms a crown.
That's amazing.
Then it says, take the crown and silver and gold and place it.
Colin Sui wants you to wave to the camera before you leave.
We're logging off, guys. It's the end of the forum.